You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And like that dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, it is a gorgeous but incredibly cold, supposedly spring Monday afternoon. And Boomer's on the board. Hey, buddy.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm awesome. But it's not only just a beautiful, cold day. It is your birthday, sir.
Oh, shit.
Happy birthday to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that.
You didn't know where I was going.
I didn't know what you were doing. I thought you were going to talk about your bracket or something. I didn't know where we were going with that.
I'm sure we'll talk about that later.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Yes.
Yes.
I am officially older, but... that's good. Thank you, man.
Yes, appreciate you.
Hey, we got a great show laid on for you. 2:30. Stay tuned for this, because at 2:30, U.S. Senator Tommy Tuberville will be calling into the show. So we'll get Coach on the show. We're going to talk about things. You know, he's a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee. He also sits on the subcommittee for readiness. And so I want to talk with him about where we are right now, because the state of the world is getting more frisky by the moment, if you know what I mean. And where are we right now in terms of readiness? What are we going to do? He's been taking some bold steps to lash out at the Secretary of Defense for woke policies. So, yeah, we'll talk to Senator Tommy Tuberville at 2:30. Stay tuned for that one. Then at 3:30, Will Blakely, he's a reporter with 1819 News. He broke two stories about major wokeness in the curriculum at the universities of Auburn and Alabama. Yeah, right here at our flagships, two biggest universities in the state, one of which is the State University. And you'll be shocked to find out the kind of things that are, you know, being funded with tuition and taxpayer dollars, I might add. All right, then all that to say, that's at 3:30, by the way, with Will Blakely. And then we got a super-duper triple-dipper. Hit it, bud.
The triple-dipper. Three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the triple-dipper. Three stories, three themes you got to know as we run today's show. So the first one, I'm calling it Fit to Fight. We do this periodically where we look at the state of readiness for our military. How are we doing? And we're going to have that conversation with Coach Tuberville, Senator Tuberville. I guess I call him Coach. And then at the same time, we're going to transition from there into discussions about world events, reasons why we have to be ready, and what things might be standing in the way. So Fit to Fight, number one on the triple dipper. Number two, I'm calling it Higher Wokeness. Higher Wokeness. Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff out there right now in the university system, not the least of which are those two articles I told you that we're going to talk to Will Blakely from 1819 News about. Deep wokeness in our university systems. Like, wow. Like, look, do they even like teaching in America? Because you wouldn't know it by the curriculum you see in some places. So, yeah, number two on the triple dipper, higher wokeness. And then number three, you heard it over the news, it totally changed my plans. I had an entirely different dipper plan for today, and I put that one aside. Political prosecution. Yeah, this whole nut roll of a job, of the situation we've got with the Soros-backed district attorney from Manhattan is bringing charges against the former president of the United States, Donald Trump. This is the most jacked up situation to political prosecution I think I've ever seen. And I thought I'd seen a few. But we'll talk about it. Number three on the triple dipper later in the show, political prosecution. And there's a lot of news just developing on that one even as we speak. All right, but let me step aside from politics. Let me open my monologue here by saying that aside from it being my birthday, thank you, Boomer, aside from it being my birthday, today is March 20th, 2023, and 20 years ago today marked the kickoff to one of the most epic preliminary bombardments to any campaign in history, and the world today knows it as shock and awe. And the crazy thing was that in the age of modern communications, we were able to watch in real time as Saddam Hussein learned that he was indeed vulnerable. He was vulnerable. As the might of the U.S. military pounded Iraq's Ba'ath Party headquarters and military targets and government installations all around Baghdad and surrounding areas, with precision-guided munitions that hit with devastating effect, shock and awe. The most commonly viewed scenes from shock and awe came from atop a tall building on the north side of the Tigris in Baghdad. And 1 year later, I was standing in that very spot where the cameras had captured the footage that showed the world what the U.S. can do when it gets its mind set on it. But as I thought about that bombardment, about the fact that we're on the anniversary of a 20-year campaign that kicked off then, it hit me that we're also on the anniversary of another situation as well. This is roughly the 21st anniversary of an epic battle that occurred in Afghanistan, one that has been forgotten by many, but yet one that shows that even more than the technological might that can put a guided missile on target in the dark of night, that we are a nation that also breeds warriors. In spite of everything that we conservatives get concerned about, wokeness in the military, strength on the international stage, will we be ready if China or Russia or Iran or North Korea or all of them decides that military action is finally their option? In spite of everything I just said and more, I still believe that America is a nation that breeds warriors. And in March of 2002, the Battle of Roberts Ridge showed that to be true, and we should not forget it. So the war in Afghanistan had just kicked off in the last days of 2001, and part of the initial effort was to find Osama bin Laden. The hunt created what became known as Operation Anaconda in the Tora Bora Mountains. For the first part of the operation, Task Force 1-1, made up mostly of ground force of Rangers, pursued al-Qaeda and Taliban forces, but in the early March of 2002, much of that mission was assigned over to members of SEAL Team 6. Two platoons of SEALs, call signs Mako 30 and Mako 31, were tasked to set up observation posts on the high ground surrounding what was called the Shaikot Valley to target the enemy and to call in airstrikes. Mako 30 was assigned the mission of setting up on top of a mountain called Takur Gar. The intelligence was faulty going in, with estimates of only a few hundred demoralized Taliban fighters in and around the valley. Yeah, right. But this was a stronghold that the Soviets had been bloodied in more than once. It was filled with caves and rough terrain, and Mako 30 took fire the minute their Chinook helicopter entered the area around the landing zone. Light and heavy automatic weapons fire riddled the chopper, and one RPG then entered the fuselage, blew out all the electricals on the ramp hydraulics, and as the Chinook was slewing in the air, SEAL Petty Officer First Class Nathan Roberts was thrown out the back, landing 30 feet down. The aircraft was out of control, and it wound up crash landing nearly 4 miles away. With a second aircraft making a rescue operation, still took over an hour, and when the members of Mako 30 came under fire immediately upon approach once again to the mountain trying to rescue Roberts. In the interim, though, drone footage had showed that Roberts had activated his emergency strobe, but that 40 enemy fighters rushed in on him. AC-130 gunships, F-16s, and Predator drones pounded a well-dug-in enemy force, but enemy resolve was high, and once again the second Chinook, bringing the SEALs of Mako 30 into the fight, it was disabled, and it came down hard on the ledges of Takur Gar. Eventually, joined by a quick reaction force of 35 Rangers, the battle at Takur Gar, known by many now as the Battle of Roberts Ridge, became one of the deadliest and longest-running battles of the war, with U.S. forces engaging the enemy in a continuous 17-hour gunfight that several times devolved into hand-to-hand combat. Among the numerous citations for heroism in that fight were two Medals of Honor, and one of those was for Air Force Combat Controller Tech Sergeant John Chapman. Chapman's heroism on the ground in personal combat with the enemy resulted in numerous enemy taken out by his own actions in ground combat. But Chapman also called in airstrikes, sometimes at danger-close spacing, with great precision. At some point in the fight, though, Chapman received what were thought by his comrades to be mortal wounds. But that was not the end of Chapman's story. The U.S. troops at Roberts Ridge eventually pounded the enemy into submission in the March of 2002, but extraction was not possible. It was actually delayed by leaders back at Bagram Air Base, who deemed the site too hot to conduct another helicopter operation for medevac until night fell. Meanwhile, the combat medics were doing all they could on the ground, but at least one member of the force died while waiting for his medevac. But in what became one of the most infamous and heroic stories of the war, in the fog and the confusion of a nighttime extraction, Tech Sergeant Chapman, presumed dead at the time, was left behind. Neither Chapman nor Roberts' bodies were ever recovered, and if you know anything about the creed of the U.S. military, we don't sit well with the idea of leaving a fallen comrade to fall into the hands of the enemy. Chapman's heroics posthumously earned him the Air Force Cross, initially. That's the second highest award for valor in the Air Force. But over time, a story began to leak out. Over time, the narrative began to change, and at some point, the story was confirmed that over a half hour after the U.S. troops had been evac'd, that overhead surveillance footage indicated that there was one man alone in hostile territory, still fighting the enemy by himself. Drone footage indicates that for over an hour, that Chapman was on the ground alone. Wow. Continuing to take out enemy fighters who eventually closed in on his position. In 2018, after several years of pushing the story upward, President Trump presented Sergeant John Chapman's widow with the Medal of Honor. At the ceremony, Trump said, quote, "In this final act of supreme courage, John gave his life for his fellow warriors. Through his extraordinary sacrifice, John helped save more than 20 American service members." But it was the words of Tech Sergeant John Chapman himself that says the most. As his chopper came down, it is said that Chapman rushed off the ramp into overwhelming enemy fire and almost immediately dispatched two enemy fighters himself. And as he hunkered down to begin calling for air support, his ground force commander, now retired Colonel Ken Rodriguez, relates that Chapman yelled, "There is the danger. It's directly in front of me. If that doesn't stop, everyone will die." And Rodriguez told reporters, "John's actions saved all of us." So, yeah, I get concerned about wokeness. And I wonder sometimes if the next generation has what it takes. But history, not so distant history, tells me with unequivocal force that America still breeds warriors, warriors who will rise to the occasion, like the Battle of Roberts Ridge 21 years ago this month. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. I'm telling you, there's a lot of things that happened 20 and 21 years ago this month. And I was actually there, coming through into Afghanistan around the time this Tora Bora mission was happening at Takur Gar. I still have, by the way, and I've told it before, I have a 105 shell that a Spectre gunner gave me that was fired in Operation Anaconda in March of 2002. And I have no way of knowing if it was fired on the Battle of Roberts Ridge. But nonetheless, that's a battle that's worth remembering. Look it up. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right, saving the world one soundbite at a time. Many thanks to the many of you who are already texting in. I appreciate the birthday wishes. Thank you so much for that. I am honored. And got a couple, too, about the monologue. Today being the 20th anniversary of Shock and Awe and the beginning of the invasion of Iraq. And then on top of that, though, just a year prior to that, 20 years almost to the day of the Battle of Roberts Ridge in Afghanistan. By the way, there were two medals of honor that came out of that one fight. When you consider that the one fight had roughly a right at 40 men in it, 40 of hours, and two of those got medals of honor, silver stars, bronze stars, purple hearts left and right. And then a number of deaths. It was an epic fight, and it was truly an indication to the Taliban that, yeah, they can inflict casualties, but by God, we can take a mountain down about 4 feet, and they did. Boomer.
Yeah.
Over the weekend.
Oh no.
Over the weekend, I got to where I was fourth in our bracket.
You did.
March Madness.
All right, Phil.
It let's is do March this. Madness. They named it right.
They did.
I am now 41st.
I remember like, we were texting back and forth. And you go, I'm fourth. oh, wait, now I'm 41st.
Yeah, I know. Well, actually, when I texted you, I think I dropped to 21st.
Oh, that's what it was. It was 21st.
And then I woke up this morning, and I was 41st. I was like, what
I'm
the
not
heck?
Even going to speak where I'm at. I'm
hey,
at like
Boomer, 80, where are you at?
83rd. A whopping 83.
But what's funny is...
Oh, man.
The lovely McQueen.
Where is she? She is in fifth. And she's in fifth place with five others right now. And she just texts in and goes, yeah, no need to overthink it, guys. Just choose them based on their colors.
That one's pretty. I'll pick that one. Man. And they win. Oh. Well, you know what? Fine.
Fine. No, this is a blast because it's a little addicting going through and you're like, that team won. What did I pick?
We got a ton of right side ruffians in this bracket right now.
I love it.
Who's leading out right now?
Brian. So I don't know which Brian that is, but there's Brian with a lot of numbers. And then Bruce is in the lead as well with Brian. And then we got...
they're tied? Okay.
Yep. And then there's a tie for third as well. And it's Elisa and Chris.
Wow. Where's Brandy from Athens? Because she was killing it for a while there.
Yeah, where did Brandy go?
I see Badger, too. Badger's in 13th.
Yep. Uh-huh.
What other names do we know?
Brandy is now in 30th.
She's 30. Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. And she was just rocking.
She's rocking it.
I know it, rocking it for a while there. All right. I got somebody texting in right here. Barry from Fultondale says, what's the name of the battle you just spoke of? I'd like to learn about the bravery of that Ranger. Mm-hmm. There were a bunch of Rangers. Thanks, Barry, for asking. It's the Battle of Roberts Ridge. You can also sometimes find it as the Battle of Takur Gar. That's spelled Takur, next word Ghar. But yeah, most folks, you just Google the Battle of Roberts Ridge, and it was in March of 2002. The guy you're talking about, he was not actually a Ranger. He was Air Force Special Operations. He was a combat controller named John Chapman. John Chapman. And then I believe the SEAL that died because he fell out of the back of the chopper when they were on their way in the first time. His name was I believe Nathan Roberts, Petty Officer First Class Nathan Roberts. So yeah, a SEAL and an Air Force combat controller, but there were a bunch of Rangers and Army Special Operations Aviation guys that died and were in the mix. But anyway, Paul from Huntsville just texted in and said, I was a Rockasan. Hey, he was a Rockasan. That's the 101st Airborne guys. He said, I was a Rockasan, Bravo Company, 1st of the 187th Infantry in Afghanistan for Operation Anaconda and Operation Mountain Lion. Mm. I remember seeing officers, he says, coming from watching that unfold via drone, and a lot of grown men were visibly shaken. I bet that's true, man. Thanks for your service, Paul. Appreciate that very much. Leanne from Huntsville, she says, me and McQueen gonna win. Yeah, apparently it's Ladies' Day on the bracket right now.
It is. Little man asked me, hey, why didn't I get to do one with you, Dad? I'm like, oh, sorry, dude, next time. He said, I would have picked it all by the animals.
The mascots. And he probably would have won.
He probably would have won.
What if they didn't have an animal?
Oh, then I would have made, you know, helped him figure it out.
Like, what's a Boilermaker?
That's true. I'd be like, or maybe then it would be the color. I'd be like, which one do you like?
All right. Hey, listen, more texts are coming in. Brian from Huntsville just says, not me. I'm Vault Brian sitting at 45. Hey, listen, coming up right after this break, Senator Tommy Tuberville calling in. We're going to talk to him about military readiness. He's a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee. You're going to want to hear that one, and we'll take it straight from there into the first part of the Triple Dipper. Fit to fight. Where are we as a military? What's going on in the world? Good Lord, we'll talk about it. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. I'm talking about we covered down on some ground across the most beautiful state in the nation, from way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. Well, hey, listen, pleased to bring on some great guests for all of y'all to make sure that you stay attuned with what's happening in a variety of ways. And the next guy coming on is someone who, is a man who's gone from 2004 National Coach of the Year to now being the senior senator from Alabama. So with that introduction, let me just go ahead and bring him on. Senator Tommy Tuberville, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Phil. What a country. Coach being a senator.
Huh? That's America right there.
Yep, it is. Somebody's got to come work in this clown show, so I guess it might as well be me.
Well, make them run laps or something. But listen.
I could. I'd make them all run.
I know that to be true. And I bet some of your former players know that to be true. But, hey, Senator, in the time we got here, let me just jump right in, too. You are a sitting member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, and you also serve on several of their very important subcommittees. I wanted to get you on that topic at first. And I look at the state of the world. I'm going to do some discussion here in a minute when we get off with you about things that are happening. But one of the things that I've really appreciated is you have been pretty much no holds barred when it comes to dealing with woke policies. While readiness is flagging, we seem to have things like, let's get abortion on demand for our military service members and transgender in service and all of that. And you recently came out and you even held up confirmations in D.C. over those policies. So tell us about that.
Yeah, well, we feel our military has been awesome. You know, that's one of the reasons that we're made it to, what, 247, 248 years and counting. National security is very, very, very important. But for some reason, this administration, the Biden administration, and all of his woke people behind the scenes, such as the Department of Defense and Homeland Security, they are trying to change our country and change the Constitution, try to change the way we do things. But it's very important that we keep a military that's driven for national security. But now this group that are woke, they're trying to teach CRT. They're trying to change the way we do things in the military. And one is to change the policy that we've had for years and years about abortion. You know, when you have an opportunity to have abortion, but it's got to be because of rape, incest, or something in terms of the health of the mom.
Right.
But they want to change it to where you can get a abortion on demand. Plus, the dependents can have abortions paid for by taxpayer dollars, transported across to other states to have the abortion. And again, there's nothing in the Constitution that says that anybody has to have their taxpayer money spent towards a abortion. And that's what Roe v. Wade was all about, sent it back to the states. But for some reason, this group in the Department of Defense thinks that they were elected to Congress and they can change rules at their convenience. And so because of doing that, I said, okay, if you're going to do that, I'm going to put a hold on all your promotions in the military in terms of flagship officers. And so they're not very fond of it, but until they change that back, we're not going to have any promotions, and unless they go through regular order, which takes months and months. So they've averaged, Phil, 20 abortions a year with the policy that we've had. And if they do this, and which they've changed this, and it started March the 8th, I think, the new policy, we did a third-party look at it, and we're going to have between 4,000 and 5,000 a year, which they're very, very excited about. And it's not right, and we're going to fight it.
Well, and the reality is, too, they defy the fact that there are state laws that are in place, like Alabama, that make Alabama virtually an abortion-free state, but they're intent upon, you know, allowing and paying for, like you said, even in contravention to state law, which I know our Attorney General Steve Marshall is trying to take issue with also.
Well, exactly. And again, they're just trying to change everything that they possibly can. There's another thing I'm trying to get changed. They're doing it now in our VAs across the country. And they just did it on their own. They said, we're just going to start doing abortions in the VAs. Number one, they're not equipped to do it. They don't have the funds to do it. But they've since Roe Wade, they're trying to find every roundabout way to get abortion in there. And this is just another way to do it.
Well, I'll be honest with you, as a former pro-life state legislator, I can tell you how much I appreciate the fact that you're taking this fight. And I hate to see general officers and flag officers, you know, have their confirmations held up, but that's also a great way to get some people's attention. And I've always said, if you know the rules of the Senate, you can get a lot done, and you just proved that. So thank you, sir.
Well, you got it. We're going to use those rules to the best of our ability. It's going to be hard to win this fight, but it's worth fighting.
Well, let me kind of switch there. A good segue there is the fight's worth having, but one of your Colorado peers took issue with it and tried to use it as leverage to go after the Space Command issue again. And once again, the Air Force Secretary is delaying the decision. What's the latest on Space Command? Are you going to get that thing done sometime soon?
Well, just this administration, when they got into office, they said, we just don't want this to be a political decision. And so we want to redo some of these studies on Space Command. Of course, President Trump and his Secretary of Air Force, after doing their due diligence, said that it was going to Huntsville, behind the Redstone Arsenal, which is the best place in the country to put it.
Right.
But they went back and did all these studies, and lo and behold, they came back and said Huntsville is the place to put it. So we're waiting for them to go ahead and decide to say, you know, that was the right thing to do. We can't get anybody to make a decision. They know it's the right decision to do, but it looks like they might try to be making this political.
No
kidding.
It's
exactly what they, yeah. So we're going to fight it. We're going to listen. And again, I'm not making a lot of friends in the military with the hold on these flagship officers and all that, but it's not going to have anything to do with Space Command, but they know we mean business, and they know we mean business on this, too, because we somehow every day or every part of the week spend time on Space Command and our meetings, hearings, and talk about it, and we're not going to give up till we get it.
Well, and rightfully so. And like you said, Huntsville's done everything it's supposed to do. Alabama's done everything it's supposed to do, and not a single study has come back and said, we ain't the ones. So, yeah, that's definitely a fight worth continuing to have.
Well, too, Phil, the thing about it is, there was four or five locations they looked at, and it ended up number one for Huntsville. Number two was in Nebraska.
Yeah.
Number three was in San Antonio. Number four was in Colorado, the one that's complaining about it. They wasn't even in the top three. And we got to put this in the right place, because if we do have another war, a big-time war, it's going to start in space, and we have got to make sure that we're on top of it. Get them behind the Redstone Arsenal is no doubt the safest, most equipped place to do it. And hopefully we end up in the right spot on this.
Well, Coach, listen, I got two more topics I want to hit you with before we go. And I'll stay on the military first, and we'll do Mexico last. But on the military readiness, you sit on the subcommittee for readiness and management support. And even today, mm-hmm. we're hearing about Premier Xi meeting with President Putin. That's a heck of an alliance. And then North Korea is posturing against South Korea again with nuclear threats. The world is not looking like a peaceful place. What do you imagine the state of our readiness to be right now?
Oh, it's not in a very good place at all, because we've got a group over here that's always one step behind in this White House. You know, with the debacle in Afghanistan ever since then, it's our military's been in disarray. The leadership from the Secretary of State to Department of Defense, we've got a lot of great military people, but of course they're trying to run people out right and left. They did that with the mandates, the vaccine mandates, and they want to totally change our country and our Constitution. And while they're doing it, they want to change our military and everything that stands for. But we've been the strongest ever, and we're going to continue to do that, and we're going to fight for it. But again, it's you see the president of China go to Russia. Joe Biden should have been over there with three of them, should talk this out. There is hundreds of people a day getting killed in Ukraine senselessly. When if we had leadership that would go over and say, listen, before we leave here, let's lock these doors and work this out and quit killing each other. But again, we got no leadership.
Right.
Nobody wants to step up. We got Tony Blinken, the Secretary of State. I don't know what he's done. I really don't. Like Mayorkas that says our borders are closed. Well, the guy's nuts. I mean, he is absolutely inadequate in what he's doing and should be gone because our borders aren't closed. But it's everything we do in this administration is totally opposite of what most people with any common sense would be trying to work out.
Well, so with regards to Mayorkas, if the House refers charges for impeachment to the Senate, you going to vote yes to impeach?
You got that right. I mean, he should have been gone a long time ago. There's something wrong with the guy. If you can go down there and the Border Patrol just absolutely just tells you, you got to help us, you got to help us. And he turns around and does a press conference, says, well, everything's going good.
Yeah.
You know, the border is closed. We're doing the right things here. I mean, he's putting every person in this country in harm's way. Because if you saw today, and when I was down there, I saw Russians coming across. And now that we got Chinese coming across.
Right.
I mean, it is, we have absolutely lost our mind. And I just don't know how we've elected these people in the office. And it's obvious that Biden's taking his orders from somebody else because, you know, I know at one time just listening to some of his speeches while he was a senator, he didn't believe in some of this stuff. But now he's totally changed.
Well, it feels like a puppet with strings being pulled somewhere else. You're right. But let me ask you before we go, because brand spanking new news that just came out over the last couple of days, you put out a statement. An Alabama company, Vulcan Materials, speaking of the southern border, they've had a long-time facility for like 30 years down there where they quarry limestone, and then they have a port where they ship it out. And it's a huge piece of the economy for them and for us. And apparently Mexico decided to seize the facilities or at least lock it down. What do you know about this and what's going on? We got about 2 or 3 minutes left.
Yeah, we've been working on this, Bill. Tom Hill, the CEO of Vulcan, came to me, I guess, close to a year ago and kind of laid it out about how they, for years, they've been there and they've been digging gravel and things there and shipping all over the world. And it's huge for the economy. For Mexico, they paid taxes and millions of dollars in taxes. They hired people from Mexico, paid them great wages, dug a deep water port, shipped in and out from that location. And just one day, they come in after 30, 40 years of being there, said, hey, we're going to close you down. We're going to take it over. Ran them all out. So they took it to court. And as it's in court last week, they went back in and took it over again. It's just there's no leadership. You know, you take countries like Mexico, that one day the leadership goes one way and the next it goes another. They're wishy-washy. Well, same thing we're looking at here. I mean, we don't know where we stand on issues, and we're turning into a third-world country like Mexico. So,
is your office reaching out to Mexican government right now about this Vulcan material situation?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've reached out. I know Katie Britz's office has reached out. Again, it goes to an international court. There's not a whole lot we can do other than go to their ambassador and try to get to their president, but obviously money involved on this. And again, it's been very profitable for the people of Mexico. They've lost money over the last year because it's been shut down. That just goes to show you how stupid all this is. We need to get Vulcan back in there working, going again. They're a very important company. Not just to that area, but all over the world and the United States. So hopefully we can get some kind of closure on this and get the people back to work down there and get it open again, get it going. I wouldn't doubt, though, if you looked at this field in the future, that the Chinese don't start lurking around down there. They love those deep water ports, and that just put them even closer. I just got back from Panama, where they're trying to get into there, and that's 500 or 600 miles, I guess, south of where Vulcan is. And China is all over Central America, Mexico, and all over South America. We have got to put a stop to this.
We do. And Coach, your comments are well put, and that's going to go right into my next topic here in a few minutes after we're off the air. But thanks for your time today, and I'll end with this. On a lighter note, I hope your bracket in the NCAA is looking better than mine.
Wow. Mine's not very good. But you know what? If people pick this bracket right, then they had a lot of foresight to what they were doing, because there have been some upsets.
Yes. All right. Well, hey, Coach, Senator Tommy Tuberville, Senior Senator from Alabama, thanks so much for spending time on Right Side Radio today.
Thank you, Phil.
All right. Take care. All right, Boomer, I ran long just to make sure we got those last few minutes in, but go ahead and take us to the break right now. We'll come back and sort of wrap up some of that and move right into the Dipper. I mean, we're going to be talking here about fit to fight. Fit to fight. Where are we right now? Military readiness. You heard a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee saying it ain't where it needs to be. All right, y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Good interview just then with Alabama Senator Tommy Tuberville. We covered a variety of things there. We Space Command. First of all, just would somebody just please admit they're holding that up for political purposes?
Oh, they totally are.
I mean, for the love.
I mean, Alabama has won out in every way. Improving themselves, and now they're just saying, oh, maybe we can find something else.
And you know what I didn't realize until he said it was that Colorado, who's doing all the crying right now,
was in fourth place.
That's like being a bracket buster and you still want to talk about how I almost won. No, you didn't. Yeah. You didn't almost win. Almost wins don't win. Almost wins are losers.
Check your bracket.
Colorado's bracket was busted. Huntsville got in there with a major upset.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Something else I took away, it was at the very end when we were talking about the how many, you know, Chinese are coming through, Russians are coming. Everyone else is coming through the border.
In fact, a lot of people think of it as, oh, a bunch of Central and South Americans are coming through. No, it's not all from Guatemala, y'all. Mm. Not all. It's not all from, you know, Honduras and Nicaragua. It is... We are seeing people from all over the world, and most concerning, like you said, I want to say, Boom, the number of Chinese nationals crossing the southern border has increased 1,000% in the last year.
Wow. And did correct me if I'm wrong, did I hear him say something that they're trying to gain some territory down near the canal or something? Was that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So not gain territory, more like taking control of operations.
Oh, there we go. That's.
And that's not new, though. So when Jimmy Carter, President Carter, ceded control of Panama back to the Panamanians, mm-hmm. one of the first things they did, recognizing they couldn't run it themselves, the Panama Canal is it's a big deal.
Right.
World commerce goes through the Panama Canal. And it has changed. The loss of the Panama Canal would change the world commerce in epic ways. Mm. But they ceded a lot of the control to Chinese nationals almost immediately. Chinese companies came in there and set up shop and became, you know, the next level of Panamanian citizens, I guess.
Wow.
But it's still going on and probably going on even in increased areas right now. It's out of control. The other thing you talked about besides Space Command is that Vulcan material situation, which is not a huge part of today's show, but it just kind of the news has kind of broke. I had no idea that an Alabama-based company, which, by the way, quarries all of its limestone down there, a lot of it, to bring back up here for our road building.
Mm.
Well, they've had their operations seized and shut down by the Mexican freaking government.
Wow.
I mean, does anybody respect the Biden administration at all?
No.
Apparently not. We'll talk about it more. Fit to Fight, coming right back after the break. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. all you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative justice.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios for hour number two. And yeah, like the dude just said, we cover all the issues, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, hey, breaking, this is a totally off topic. I'm just going to go ahead and say something nice about somebody that I don't often get to speak well of. So Mayor Randall Woodfin of Birmingham just posted on his social media that he just proposed, and his fiance, now fiance, said yes. So we don't always agree on policy, but I can celebrate when there's worth celebration. And so congratulations to Mayor Randall Woodfin, and we wish you the best in your future marriage. All right, let's jump into the triple dipper here. Fit to fight. Where are we at? What's going on? It's a saucy world, man. It's a saucy world right now. There is something at every corner, every hemisphere. So the southern hemisphere right here on our southern border, it ain't pretty. There's a lot of instability in places like Venezuela and the Central American and South American countries that are flooding their people, sometimes even releasing them from prisons to make their way north to the U.S. border, which is porous, pouring fentanyl across. You just heard about U.S. Resources through Vulcan Materials, Alabama's Vulcan Materials having their plant and their port operations seized for reasons that we can't fathom. And then all that's right happening right here in our hemisphere. Then you've got, of course, the Middle East, Saudi Arabia and Iran forming their new pact. Iran being the largest exporter of terrorism in the known world. You got Iran also very close, they say, to nuclear capability. And then you've got, I mean, everything else in the Middle East is also just, it's a whack-a-mole over there right now. And always is, just every single day. Who do we like today? Who do we not like today? What's going on with Hamas? Where's Hezbollah? Lebanon, Israel is constantly an ally that then has to deal with the next administration who may not be as warm to Israel, which is where we are again right now. And that's the Middle East. And then you got Southwest Asia. What's that? That's Pakistan, a nuclear Pakistan, by the way, always unsettled with India. Where do we stand in that? Well, that's where they found Osama bin Laden. And they're also in the southern border of Afghanistan, where the Taliban's now in charge again because of the Afghanistan pullout debacle. And then just north of that, you have all the former Soviet stans, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, all of those. Lots of instability. And then just north of that, you got Ukraine and the Ukraine war and what's going on over there, which, by the way, China is now posturing. China is posturing itself as the diplomatic whiz of the world right now, trying to fill the vacuum being left by the Biden administration, which has zero foreign policy capability, strategy, or plan. And then on top of all that, let's go, why don't we look at the Far East while we're at it? North Korea, just yesterday, postured for the first time that we've seen in staging a military nuclear strike exercise against South Korea. That's never happened before. We went one step further than they've ever gone before and postured an actual drill about nuclear operations against the South and U.S. forces. Have I covered it all? I mean, every single day, it seems that not only do we have the whack-a-mole of a hotspot, and there are many, and every president has them, but the problem we got right now is usually we can whack the mole. Right now, the Biden administration is constantly trying to just not look like a fool, and it's not always working out. When's the last time you heard of the thing like we had last week? Was it last week? Daily Wire, March 16th. That'd be Thursday. Yeah. The incident in which Russian fighter jets harassed a U.S. military drone over international waters, actually colliding with it and causing a complete loss of the drone. By the way, this is no small thing. That's a $53 million surveillance aircraft, which was flying in international airspace. U.S. European Command last Tuesday said the two jets had repeatedly harassed the drone while the drone was conducting routine operations in international airspace. The statement said that the incident followed a pattern of dangerous action by Russian pilots while interacting with U.S. and allied aircraft over international airspace that could lead to miscalculation and unintended escalation. You think? When's the last time you remember? Now, granted, I get it. Russia's ticked at us. We are funding the fight against them in Ukraine. But when's the last time Russian jets in international airspace did something as provocative as what they did with our drone? And they knew what they were doing. In fact, reports are that those Russian pilots are being honored by the Russian government. Really? Wow, big doings, fellas. Let's spray fuel on top of a drone aircraft that has no ability to fight back and then knock it out of the air because we're bad pilots. But let's get a medal for that. Okay. All right, listen, the reality is this. We're at a place right now where the world has gotten more unstable than we've seen it in quite a while. You add to that the fact that we have a military command under the civilian leadership of this nation, which does not seem to have their act together. Now, I am not trying to say, by the way, that our military is not fit to fight as a series of individuals. What I am saying, though, is upper-level leadership, the flags, the suits, are so focused, or for that matter, maybe their lack of focus, that they are missing the mark. Recruiting being down, readiness suffers. We're providing a huge amount of our weapon stores to Ukraine. And yet you don't ever hear anybody saying, and here's how we're going to fix our readiness issues. So let me jump into this. U.S. Representative Mike Rogers from Alabama. Well, of course, Congressman Rogers is now the chairman of House Armed Services. He joined with the chairman of House Foreign Affairs, that's Mike McCaul of Texas, and House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, Chairman Mike Turner. And they did a letter to National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan about the cooperation we're seeing right now between Russia and China. And they call it a direct threat to U.S. security. This is not just about Ukraine. Listen to this. I had not heard this until I read this article from Yellowhammer that came out Friday. Russia's state-owned nuclear energy corporation, Rosatom, is helping the People's Republic of China acquire enough weapons-grade plutonium to fuel its strategic nuclear breakout. That's a whole different ballgame. Now you might understand why Xi is talking to Putin, and Putin needs stuff from Xi. Well, guess what? Xi needs stuff from Putin. It says, beyond fueling the PRC's strategic nuclear breakout, which in 2021, Strategic Command Commander Admiral Charles Richard called breathtaking, Rosatom helps fuel Putin's war efforts in Ukraine. So we call on the administration to view this cooperation for what it is, a direct threat to U.S. security and more evidence that Russia and China are working in tandem against the United States. And then called on the Biden administration to put a stop to this collaborative action that would put nuclear capability in the hands of the Chinese and more money in the hands of the Russians. And they end that letter by saying, the longer we wait to act, the more difficult it will be to address Rosatom's nefarious and malign dealings. In short, every dollar and euro that Rosatom brings in directly finances the death and destruction we see in Ukraine, China's nuclear weapons expansion, and is a direct threat to our American way of life. That's about as strong a statement as you could ask for from Alabama's own chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, Chairman Mike Rogers. Well, that relationship between China and Russia, it's thus far been not quite as open. But now, China, the emboldened China, because they could care less what America does because Biden's at the helm. Story on Fox News came out yesterday. China's Xi is set to meet Putin in an effort to weaken U.S. standing at a highly significant gathering. This is a big, in the eyes of the world, this is a tone setter. When you look at this kind of stuff, you look at it and go, Well, they got together. I mean, they're going to get together sometimes. What's the big deal? No, no. It sends a statement. It says to the world, hey, you know, we could care less what Biden says. Guess what we're doing? We're having lunch. We're having lunch together. And we're having our picture taken while we're having lunch together. What do you think of that? And, oh, by the way, we combined create quite an opposition to the United States. And that's what they're doing. The General Secretary of the Chinese Communist Party, according to Fox News, is slated to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Moscow on Monday, today. It's the latest sign of Beijing's emboldened diplomatic ambitions, and it comes amid sharpening east-west tensions over the war in Ukraine. The meeting with Putin is, quote, highly significant because Xi is incentivized to drag out Putin's war in Ukraine because China benefits from it as both of its top strategic adversaries are now depleting their combat arsenals in Ukraine. Yeah, it's to China's benefit for the war to continue. They get a chance to watch Russia just burn through its resources. They know that Russia needs them and will make deals that they need for energy and for plutonium. And then on top of that, they're watching us expend our resources in such a way that it's depleting our stocks, which I'll get to in a minute. This is a huge, hairy deal. So Admiral John Kirby, the spokesperson for the National Security Council, said there's no question that both China and Russia, and this is right out in the national security strategy, he said, are two countries that are chafing against the international rules-based order that the United States and so many of our allies and partners have built up. They don't like it. He basically goes on to say they want a new world order. They want a new world order in which the United States is subservient to them. I'm going to tell you right now, folks, it appears, in my opinion, that everything that the Biden administration is doing is designed to make that happen. It's gotten to the point that I'm struggling to find it to be just ineptitude and lack of leadership. It feels intentional. The southern border, that's freaking intentional. You can't say otherwise. The lack of effort to find out about the COVID leak, whether it came from the Wuhan lab, that's purely intentional. There's no other way around it. Call it political if you want, but political is intentional. When you do it for political gain or political protection, it's intentional. And so what we're looking at right now is the degradation of our U.S. readiness, our capability to sustain operations and our economy in the wake of conflict. And it's on the cusp right now of looking like everything they're doing is intentionally designed to cause that to happen. Well, so let me skip through a couple things. I tell you what, Boomer, let's do this. Let's take a break right now. We'll take the break. We'll come back. I got a little more on this, and there's no way I'm getting through all my stuff, Boom. Ain't no way I'm getting through all my stuff.
You got a lot of stuff.
I got a lot of stuff. Because 3:30, we're going to switch gears and go to the phone with Will, which I'll weed through my pile to see which stories I want to use. Out of all the ones I've got, I'll pick a couple. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Fit to fight, are we? We'll talk about it. Be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, just plain right, saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, listen, let's go ahead and wrap up this this section on Fit to Fight. How are we doing, by the way? Readiness, Air Force, I believe the Air Force has finally begun to meet its recruiting levels. I think the Army is still lagging. I will say I saw for the first time this past weekend during the March Madness the new commercial for Army recruiting, and they go back to the "Be All You Can Be," and I kind of dig that. It was a pretty good commercial. Something about it was a little off the mark. Like, it didn't do anything woke. I appreciated the fact that it just, you know, it showed throughout history how people have signed up to defend America's interests, and it had great visual imagery. As the guy who was talking about it was kind of like marching through time, different battlefields. Well orchestrated, but something about it didn't like just fire me up. Like, you know, I used to love the old commercials, you know, with the Marine Corps, you know, and some of the Army commercials with, you know, paratroopers, things jumping out of airplanes. It just seemed a little slow. I don't know how to describe it. But it was still a heck of a lot better than the one they had before, the cartoon of Susie having two mommies and protesting as she grew up and gay rights, LGBTQ rallies. And that made her into an activist that wanted to join the Army to follow her dream. Shut up. Good gosh. But where are we on other readiness issues? So, you know, there's the old saying that you can have all the best fighters in the world, but if you can't get the beans and bullets to the front lines, things come to a grinding halt. Well, Wall Street Journal has a piece that came out last Thursday. Title of it, U.S. Reaches Deep Into Its Global Ammunition Stockpiles to Help Ukraine. Okay. We're going to keep supplying Ukraine, apparently, for a period of time. And by the way, I don't want Russia to win. So, on the one hand, I am conflicted because I don't want Russia to win. They don't deserve to win. They need to be pushed back across their borders and made to be a pariah and an embarrassment in the eyes of the world. And I'm fine with that. And they're getting spanked right now. Like, spanked. But what's the strategy? What's the plan? What's the end state? How long do we keep depleting our own stores and writing blank checks? That's the problem, is the lack of accountability. However, I will say this. I talked to a young Army officer recently, just in the last few days, who just got back from Poland, who had a chance to interact with those that are training Ukrainian soldiers, and he said they are some of the finest trainees they've ever had a chance to train. That they are so, of course, their mission mindset is they know they're taking whatever they're learning here and they're walking straight into a war zone with it. And it's their homeland. So they come in with a different passion. He said what's also interesting is, and he said this is a firsthand account. He said that Ukrainians have for years had to learn how to fix stuff because they didn't always have stuff. In the United States, it's easier for us because of our production capacity sometimes just to replace it. Over there, they got to fix it. And he said they're actually doing things in the field right now. A 155 howitzer or something will break down, and they'll quickly machine a new part and just put it on there, make it themselves, and make it work and keep firing. They do that. It's just where they've been. It's really interesting to hear him say they are some of the finest trainees, quickest learners they've ever seen. However, story in the Wall Street Journal, Ukraine's insatiable demand for artillery has for months outpaced Western forecasts, setting off a global hunt for more ammunition and forcing the U.S. to raid its own stocks abroad to help Kyiv prepare for its counteroffensive later in the spring. We have some allies that are holding back. They're not wanting to commit. It says that Russia has repeatedly warned countries not to supply arms to Ukraine. But here's one example. The U.S. has provided Kyiv with about 160 howitzers. That's a 155 cannon. So 155 millimeter ammunition, we've sent more than 1 million rounds of 155 millimeter ammunition. That 155 is a real boon. They've been using it constantly. But it says, to date, much of the ammunition has been coming from U.S. military stocks, pushing our inventories to low, low levels. And we've also sought to increase our own domestic production. We used to be able to manufacture about 13,000 rounds a month. We jumped it up to 20,000. Right now they're saying to keep this up, we got to jump it up to 50,000 rounds a month in order to maintain our own stocks and supply Ukraine. What does that do to our readiness? Well, it degrades it. And China's watching because they know that if we were to jump in right now with both feet, that we would be hard-pressed to have the stores that we need to get beans and bullets to the front line. All right, folks, that's it. Boomer, do you see how I just smoothly
that
ended that?
That was smooth.
And then
good
the music
job.
Started.
Yes.
Wow. Okay, anyway, hey, we're going to switch gears. Higher wokeness. Education institutions are teaching some serious wokeness, and we got Will Blakely from 1819 News calling in. Y'all stay tuned. All you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, covering down on some major ground across the upper half of the most beautiful state in the nation, Alabama. I'm talking about we go way on down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. All right, we're switching gears. Number two on the Triple Dipper today, higher wokeness, I'm calling it. It's amazing to me. It's always been this way. You know, you think that the sort of the bastions of liberal thought seem to arise in the university system. More than that now, though. More than that. What's interesting is we're seeing more and more that there does not appear to be an opportunity for dissent or to avoid those topics, which are not just different, they're offensive. And then you got required reading, and then you got professors that don't honor the idea that you might think differently, and you like to think that somewhere else is right here in Alabama. Well, 1819 News reporter Will Blakely, who's been on the show several times, has written a couple of articles, one of which came out today, the other one came out last Friday. Today's article is called How a University of Alabama's Women's Study Course Promotes Radical Gender Ideology, and boy, it does. And the other one came out Friday, talks about Auburn University's Office of Sustainability touts DEI, CRT, and feminist theory and environmental activism. It's right here. Those are our two flagship state-funded universities. So without any further ado, let me just go ahead and bring Will Blakely on. He called in. I appreciate his time. Will, how you doing, buddy?
Good, Phil. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good, man. Listen, I read both of these, you know, like rolling my eyes, getting aggravated, and then also just amazed that it's here in Alabama. But talk about this one with the University of Alabama, the article you brought out today. Because that thing has got some just offensive reading in it.
Yeah, so we actually covered this particular class maybe several weeks ago. It was revealed that they had charged students $95 for a textbook, an online textbook that's just links to other otherwise freely available sources like AL.com, wow. Washington Post, New York Times. Or YouTube videos that they could have otherwise gotten for free. And so I wrote about that, and then, of course, I got a hold of the textbook itself and all the links, so I just decided to read it. And when I read it, I was like, there's more to this story. I wrote about what it was saying about gender, because you think a women's studies class would teach you what a woman was, but I mean, it doesn't seem to know what a woman is.
Well, let me ask you this. First off, one thing I didn't catch, or maybe I missed it when I was going through the article, was this a required course or an elective? Do you know?
This is an elective. I doubt it's that's a guess, but I mean, I highly doubt it's a required course.
Well, I would hope that would be true because, yeah. I mean, I'm looking at your article here and there are things in here like readings on the fact that they call Christianity and Western philosophy intellectual fascism. We've got drag queens are great teachers. We got how to queer society, and then it goes on. Even goes into men's studies, and that doesn't go very well either.
Yeah, no. And if anyone, these are obviously just selections that I found in the curriculum, but I actually attached the textbook itself to the story. So if anyone wants to go through and see many of the other things that were written about, they can go find the story, and I embedded the textbook there, and all the links are there, so they can see it firsthand. But some of this is pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, it really is. So let me ask you this: I understand the idea of being taught what I would call an opposing viewpoint. But was there anything in this reading that allowed for the counterpoint, the traditional values and the idea of gender being what you're born with and only being two genders? Was there anything in there that established that as the alternative, or was it strictly this queering of society and intellectual fascism?
I clicked on every link and I tried to read everything that they had, everything that I could get my hands on, and I didn't see a single reading assignment that talked about, that did give the traditional point of view. I don't know. Maybe this women's studies class invited a pastor or a Catholic priest to come speak, but I kind of highly doubt that.
I know they didn't invite a certain conservative radio guy to come speak. I know that.
Yeah.
Have you had a chance to reach out to the university or to the professor herself? Her name is Elizabeth McKnight, and ask about this course and try to get commentary from them?
I've reached out to the university. I have not reached out to the professor herself yet. I did not get a response to the university, but perhaps there's a call for some further attempts.
Well, so this course, and it may be an elective. It sounds like you think it might be, but don't know for sure. But it's pretty much a left wing course, and I look at it and I think at the very least, if you're going to have a course that teaches that biology is not factual, there's got to be some counterpoint to it, because you're in the same university system that has a biology class right down the road in a different building that teaches that biology is factual. It's amazing to me the counterintuitiveness of this.
Yeah, and you think that usually their argument that in defense of this is that you go to college to learn new ideas, to be exposed to new ideas, to be able to weigh ideas. But they just pretend that, I'm only 24. I'm straight out of, I didn't go to the University of Alabama. I went to Auburn. But the universities today, they pretend like they're presenting all these different viewpoints, but it's really one viewpoint. And like I said, it's not like they're bringing in, it's not like you've got classes that are teaching the traditional Christian morals or the conservative viewpoint or even the libertarian viewpoint. They're just, it's pretty one-sided.
Well, so let me ask you this. Speaking of Auburn, not to be outdone, as an Auburn fan too, I appreciate the fact that the first article you wrote was about your alma mater. So you published one this past Friday about Auburn University's Office of Sustainability, touting all kinds of things like DEI and critical race theory and all that. Tell us about that and what you found.
So I just stumbled upon a press release that Auburn put out about this new report from their Office of Sustainability, and they released some sustainable development goals that were set by the United Nations, which not exactly a politically moderate organization there either.
Yeah.
And they, some of this stuff is about the environment, some of it's about reducing poverty, et cetera. But then it kind of throws in there when it's basically trying to explain how they met these goals. Well, it also threw in there things like critical race theory and a lot of environmental activism, feminist theory, and these were either things that they said were being taught or things that faculty was doing research on.
It's really pretty amazing. And I saw in that article, though, that you did reach out to the president's office and made them aware of the report. And how did the response go on that?
Yeah, and so they said that this report didn't necessarily represent the official position of the university, and that it was from the Office of Sustainable Development or Sustainability.
Well, it's a story worth tracking. I don't know if you got any more in the hopper on this, but I suspect we haven't heard the last of it. And by the way, Will, I don't know if you even know this or not, but I discovered last year that the founders of critical race theory, like two of the original founders from back in the 70s, Richard Delgado and his wife, who goes by a different name, Jean Stefancic, they are actually on staff at University of Alabama Law School now, and they are considered a professor emeritus there. But they are the leading scholars in the field of critical race theory. I'm looking at the University of Alabama's website right now. It even says that. It says attendees at a big event they were having will be introduced to critical race theory by two leading scholars from the UA, Jean Stefancic and Richard Delgado. It's right here in Alabama.
Yeah, and I knew that that's where it originated.
It's amazing. I mean, we think of ourselves as a red state, kind of woke proof, but higher ed woke is definitely here.
Absolutely.
Hey, Will, good reporting, man. I'm going to keep talking about your article when we get off, but I appreciate your time today. I know you're on the road, so thanks for making the time to call in.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me.
All right, take care. Well, it's right here. It's here. And that's one of the things I want to make sure that we're clear on. Don't think because you live in a red state that everything is, you know, unicorns and rainbows. It ain't. We're looking at some of the founders of some of the most egregious stuff out there right now, critical race theory, are right here at the University of Alabama. We're looking at coursework at Alabama. And by the way, if they're going to teach coursework like this, you would think that they would honor the opportunity for opposing view. But the readings do not allow that. Let me go back to the article real quick and just Will's article, 1819 News, published today, how a University of Alabama's women's studies course promotes radical gender ideology. One of the assignments, required assignments, was called Voices from Beyond the Sexual Binary. Presents the underlying postmodern case for gender ideology. And it says things like, and this is where I get it, this is a bit like, just like word garbage. It says, it is this nexus, the models of how we think and the problems posed by bodies that don't fit the model that has led to the explosion of interest in gender queerness and gender studies. Not really. Later, the reading calls for Christian and Western philosophy to be considered intellectual fascism. What the frick does that even mean? Intellectual fascism, apparently, is just referring to the idea that In the modern Western world, we squeeze out individual truths. Well, you're not allowed to have individual truths. They're either truths or they're not. You don't get to pick your own individual truths. There's so much garbage here. Another one of the reading assignments by someone named Andrea Smith is called Queering Society and insists that Native Americans did not have a gendered society before the arrival of Europeans, that Europeans actually imposed gender on Native Americans. Shut up! Like they didn't have boys and girls in Native American tribes? One other is in an assigned video they had to watch from something called Big Think. Judith Butler calls gender norms violent and insists that gender is a matter of behavior, not biology. Well, they want you to believe that because that gives them a choice that they can just work with. But they don't want a truth. They want their own individual truth. And this woke stuff, this higher wokeness, it's right here in Alabama. Auburn, Alabama, who knows what the other universities have? I'm sure they do. And I get it. If you're going to teach something, I get it. You're teaching someone's opinion. I hope that was not a required course. I look forward to finding out for sure whether it is or not. But then the other piece of that is, do they allow for opposing viewpoints? And I would dare say that the required reading in that course says no. All right, Boomer, take us to the break. We'll go to the break. We'll come right back and continue this discussion about a little bit more on higher wokeness. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, making it cool to be a conservative. Hey, Boomer, we're going to do that audio clip here in just a minute, that first clip we've got of a professor speaking out on the issue of what's happening with wokeness in universities. And I'll tell you this, states are fighting back. Like right here, I got a story. Iowa bill pushes to halt the woke agenda in state universities. Fox News has this story March 8th, so just about... 3 weeks ago, 2.5, a bill progressing through the Iowa House of Representatives would halt a woke agenda in the state's colleges by banning diversity, equity, and inclusion spending. It's the quote from the sponsor, State Representative Taylor Collins, says, "For too long, the DEI bureaucracies at our institutions of higher ed have been used to push a woke agenda on the faculty, staff, and students. Under the guise of diversity and inclusion, these programs work to indoctrinate students into their preferred political ideologies." And it's true. It used to be that you'd have that liberal professor, you know. I had some. I'm sure everybody did. Anybody who went to college had that one professor you could tell was a, you know, former hippie or something. It just had that whole kind of liberal mindset, and it kind of came out in their teachings. Now what we're seeing is the universities themselves taking the position by having DEI offices that push it. Well, the legislation in Iowa, the critics of it are saying eliminating the DEI office is going to remove necessary support. Oh, we're not going to be able to do things. They're trying to hurt us. But the opponents of DEI initiatives are saying just the opposite, which you can imagine, that these are practices. These DEI hiring practices are an effort to push policies that expressly favor certain demographic groups over others. It's called racism or affirmative action, and it's wrong. Boomer, let's get that audio clip. You got the thing ready for me, bud? I got two of them, so one is this professor, right? You got that one? All right, let's go ahead and play it.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis announcing plans to eliminate funding for diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, programs across all of Florida's universities. And a new board that he's appointed has already begun reshaping policies at the state's liberal arts university, one of them called the New College of Florida, which is located in Sarasota. In a new op-ed, our next guest says DeSantis is right to reform these universities. New College of Florida Board of Trustees member Mark Bauerlein joins us now. Mark, thanks very much. I read your op-ed. Love this approach. So because this is a public university, the governor has the prerogative to nominate new trustees. You can elect a new president close to the governor and change these policies. Is this unique power to Florida, or is this something other states could do as well?
Well, other states could do it. We've had a phenomenon in America for decades now. It's a curious and exasperating phenomenon where we have red states with popular conservative governors, and yet in the middle of these states, we have public universities operating hard left programs. And I don't mean sort of centrist liberal programs. I mean programs such as schools of education that have put identity politics into overdrive. And we have many, many conservative voters, Republican voters across the country or in these red states who are so frustrated. Why can't we do anything about this? Why can't we have the public university be a little more representative of the state? And the fact is that a lot of Republican governors have.
Yeah, so that was I went in and stopped. That was a great quote or interview there. I got to give credit, by the way. That was a Fox News interview. And I've forgotten the man's name. A member may be looking it up for me right now. But he was a trustee, actually, at what's called New College. I'm good, Boomer. Don't worry about it. But the reality is this. He's saying it. We got to take issues because these are state-funded universities. They're not like a little bit center-left, you know, got some stuff in there that's, you know, not necessarily conservative. But no, these are hard-left progressive liberals putting policies in place that are contrary to even to the culture of the state. Now, I get it. You're going to see some stuff. If you have a college base in San Francisco, you might see some things that you would expect to be, you know, more left than you would in Alabama. But what we're seeing right now is Alabama, Georgia, Florida. This is an insidious means of bringing a different culture into the state. Now, let me back up. I'm not that guy saying, get off my grass. You know, I recognize that people can have differing views. The question is the state-funded side of things. And, oh, by the way, don't pretend you don't have it. And do you allow opposing views? That's the important piece. Now, DeSantis, he's got his pretty much going on right now. He had his Stop Woke Act that went into law last year. However, it has been currently enjoined in court. And the Federal Appeals Court in Florida upheld the injunction just last week. Story here on CNN that came out over the weekend. Federal Appeals Court this past Thursday ruled that a temporary block on a portion of the law pushed by Florida Republican Governor Ron DeSantis restricting what can be taught in Florida public colleges will remain in place. The three-judge panel issued a 138-page order. That's huge. Listen, I'm going to tell you, we're not done with this. I mean, higher wokeness, it's a thing. And it's right here in Alabama. And it is not something that we need to allow to continue unfettered, and certainly not to be mandatory, nor to be part of the hiring, nor, by the way, to not allow for opposing viewpoints. All right. Enough of that one. We'll switch gears when we get back. You guys stay tuned. We will be right back. right side ruffians out there. You are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And yep, like that dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Hey, by the way, before we go any further, I got to tell you guys about the Elm Foundation, one of our new sponsors, Elm Foundation, ELM. ELM stands for Expect Little Miracles. I love that. So Elm Foundation, based out of Huntsville. They are a 501c3 doing amazing work right now to help people find their next level in life, if you know what I mean, to get up out of the morass. What's the word from Psalm 40? To get their feet out of the miry clay, I guess. But the Elm Foundation, they don't throw money at a situation like the government does. They go in there and they actually work, and they show people how best to, you know, get certified or trained or educated for better employment, how to work through the issues of homelessness and mental illness, and they work with other partners in the community. And the Elm Foundation is making a dent, man. And so I encourage you, check them out. Their website is ElmHSV. That's ELMHSV, as in Elm Huntsville, ElmHSV.org. They're doing a great work. And what I love, too, about them is any dollar donated to the Elm Foundation for the work that they do goes straight to programs, because all their operating costs, they have a benefactor who covers all their operating costs and keeps them moving. So all they have to do is go to work, man. Just go to work. So check them out, the Elm Foundation at elmhsv.org. That's elmhsv.org. All right, let's pause for a moment, boom shakalaka.
All right.
Just take a tactical pause. What's going on with the March Madness bracket, the Right Side Ruffian bracket? How are we doing? I am right now in, oh, Lord, I dropped again. I'm in 47th place right now. I was number four over the weekend.
I know.
It's what I get for picking my team, Auburn, to go all the way through, and they get knocked. Auburn didn't even come out of the locker room, it felt like, the second half.
Oh, I know. And then you got McQueen over here choosing from colors and mascots, and she's up at number five.
And now, I cannot say that I put a great deal of study and effort into my bracket. But I was pretty proud that it hung in there, like at number four for a while. Our leaders have switched. Is it still? Oh, Brian's still in front.
Yeah, Brian's still in front. You got Brian, Bruce, Elisa, Chris, and Lee Hopeful. Yeah, she's up there too. So
I think that's Leanne from Huntsville, because yeah, she sent a text a while ago that said that she and McQueen were going to take it all the way. Yeah. But yeah, so it's amazing. So we had 175-ish. What do we have? 175?
About 175.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 175 members in the Right Side Ruffian bracket. There will be swag at the end of it all.
There'll be some swag.
There'll be some swag and some bragging rights. So yeah, we're working on putting together a swag bag for folks who win. But you can't have, very likely, well, it's possible, a tie.
I guess it's possible, but it's unlikely.
Yeah. There's a bracket-busting tiebreaker.
That's right.
So at the end of it all, if those who ain't playing, just so you know, you pick your bracket. You know, you hope your teams work out right now. I'm pretty sure nobody's. When Purdue went down, everybody's bracket was busted. But but I'm pretty sure that at the end it's going to be hard to have a tie, because you have to actually pick the score, right?
Yeah, you had to pick the score for the championship game.
Yeah. And right now, Bama's still in it.
Bama's still in it.
What else did I see? Hang on a second. Let me pull up the bracket before. I'm going to talk about this for a minute before we go on, because it's gotten pretty. So UVA, so Bama is about to play. what, Sweet 16 is where they are right now? Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so my South bracket got blown up. I still have That's Bama in it. Creighton. Who the heck is Creighton? I don't even Creighton.
Man, Creighton came out. Creighton. They came to play.
The heck is a Creighton? I don't even know where Creighton is. Is that a college? Do they have a team? Apparently so. They're in the Sweet 16. Playing against Princeton, of all people.
Yeah, they're the ones that came out of the woodworks.
Princeton was a 15 seed.
Mm-hmm.
When Auburn and Princeton and Purdue lost, my bracket went boom. And it was just done. Oh, my gosh. Oh, hey, did McQueen just text in?
I'm sure she did.
She did. hey, McQueen. I'll read it. She says, oh, yeah, this is McQueen talking. Oh, yeah, let's go, Lee, hopeful all the way.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, my gosh. We're not safe, man. We're not safe at all.
It's been fun to just to watch it, though. I know the next games are later this week, but now everybody can just kind of look at their bracket and be like, I should have chose them.
It's been so long since I've done a bracket that the last one I did was on paper. You know,
I know, because that's what you asked me. How are you going to get everybody's paper?
Yeah, dude.
And keep up with it.
I keep up with all that.
That's a lot
that's
of
awful.
Work.
Wow. And no, it's all online. Like everything else in the world, it's all online.
All online now.
Yeah. All you had to do was go, Siri, fill out my bracket. Ba-da-doom, there it was. Anyway, okay. Enough of that. All right. Next topic that we're heading into right now. I'm calling this political prosecution, and that's exactly what it is. Boomer, have you heard about the news that broke over the weekend about Trump?
Actually, McQueen is the one that brought it up to me yesterday. She goes, have you heard about this? I said, nope, but I bet we're going to talk about it tomorrow.
So what you're telling me is McQueen's got all the info on brackets and the news.
Apparently. I was like, where are you getting your info? She's like, right here. And she held up her phone.
Well, good for you, McQueen. But yeah, that's the thing. I mean, so first of all, this is absolutely asinine. This is purely political. There is no way you can say this is not a hit job on Trump. It's amazing. I look at this and think, are they just in such a scramble mode right now? They can't think past the points of their action. And of course, as soon as I posted something on Twitter, I had my usual trolls coming in going, Phil, are you saying he's above the law? What if he's guilty? Okay, well, what if this has already been investigated and the U.S. attorney decided not to pursue it? The DOJ decided not to pursue it because there was nothing there. And, you know, did Trump have indiscretions in his life? Yes. Yes, he did, apparently, and admittedly. But the idea that we're gonna pursue felony charges on what is actually a misdemeanor charge under New York state law, and we're going to make that into something that is purely partisan from a DA, by the way, a DA who has downgraded so many felonies to misdemeanors and crime has skyrocketed in his district. And you're going to tell me this is not, don't try and tell me it's not political. And once you get politics in it, then yes, everything is suspect at that point. You've got a DA who openly derides Trump, who openly is a he's a Soros-backed DA, and he's going to go ahead and tell us that this is all about upholding the law. Well, you haven't upheld the law on anything else. Let me skip down here in my stuff and see if I can find the one that I'm looking at. Because Trump, by the way, the way we know this, by the way, is in classic Trump fashion, he went ahead and announced it. This is about to happen to me. And the whole world went, what? I will tell you this before I go to the break. Story on CNN. Phil, you went to CNN for this one? Yes, I did. I wanted to see how quick it was going to take for them to invoke January 6th. Same day. Didn't even have a chance to catch a breath. Story on CNN came out yesterday. Caitlin Collins from CNN. By the way, Caitlin Collins is from Alabama. Do you know that?
She
is.
Didn't.
Yeah, she's a CNN host. She's younger than you. Of course, you're old. But anyway.
I'm old.
Yeah. Former President Donald Trump said Saturday he expects to be arrested in connection with the years-long investigation into a hush money scheme. A hush money scheme. No, it was called a settlement agreement with a non-disparagement and a non-disclosure. That's what we do. As a lawyer, I can just tell you, I have never settled a case without having a settlement agreement that had non-disparagement and non-disclosure in it. In fact, I had one case where the other side did not want to do it because it included non-disparagement. My point was, oh, so you want to settle the case so you can go out there on Yelp and write bad reviews about my client? How about no? We don't work that way. You want to settle this case? You're going to settle it all the way. Well, that's exactly what happened with Stormy Daniels. Call it hush money if you want to. It's called a settlement agreement. It's called payment with a settlement agreement that included non-disparagement and non-disclosure. What did she do? She disparaged and disclosed. She got $130,000 and another moment of mini fame. What a messed up individual, by the way. Of course, Trump basically did this to himself back in 2006, but he also did something that is done in the legal side all the time. He paid someone for a settlement to avoid litigation and to avoid, you know, public defamation and got it set aside and went on. And so does she. If you remember, her lawyer was the guy, Michael Avenatti, who's now in jail. And the chief witness in this is the other attorney, what's his name, Michael Cohen, I believe, who is also in jail. I mean, every one of the witnesses in this, and the chief witness is a former porn star and stripper who signed a non-disparagement and then broke it, which, by the way, is a breach of contract. Yeah, don't think for a second that a settlement agreement is not a breach of contract, and that cannot be breached and be called a breach of contract. Every settlement agreement is, in effect, a contract, and every one that I've ever used is actually says in there is considered a matter of contract and is enforceable at law. But then here we go, CNN. Because Trump, and I will say this, protests are not warranted. Make your voices heard, and make your voices heard at the polling. But I do not foresee us marching in the streets, and I certainly don't see another January 6th. But what CNN does, CNN's already in the third paragraph. I'm looking at the article. In the third paragraph, which, by the way, the paragraph's only like two sentences each. In the third paragraph, CNN's John Miller reported Friday that meetings have been going on throughout the week about security preparations for a possible indictment of Trump. So immediately they went to the security preparations. In an echo of Trump's appeal to supporters in the wake of the 2020 election, he called Saturday for action, writing, "Protest, take our nation back." And then they immediately jumped to January 6th. It's all about to happen again. Insurrection. Now, what's really happening, let's focus back on where we are. Focus. Focus, CNN. What you're really looking at is the first time in history that a former president of the United States is being indicted. Oh, by the way, he's also currently a named candidate for president, which makes all of this politically suspect. All of it. All of it. Boomer, take me to a break, brother. We're going to go to the break right now. If you want to text in or call in about this topic, you can. We're doing number three of the Triple Dipper, political prosecution. What do you think? Do we wait for the indictment and watch it happen and just feel good about it? Or is this political? Is this political prosecution for purely political purposes? Call and tell me. 833-687-4448. You can text it too. Be right back. And we're back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, saving the world one soundbite at a time. I got a couple of callers that held on during the break, so we're in the subject right now of political prosecution. I'll take line one. Is that Brian? Brian from Huntsville. How you doing, buddy?
Mighty fine, and I got a serious question.
All right.
Depending on the state, Stormy Daniels, Avenatti, could this be possibly be brought up from recourse that she didn't have adequate representation to begin with. It's with him in jail and possibly disbarred. I don't know. I'm not the attorney.
Yeah, you're talking about what led to the $130,000 payment, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Well, it's possible, but the fact is she also ratified it because I'm sure she spent that money. So she would have to claim some damages on top of this too. And what damages would they be? I guess it would be that she could have gotten more money, but that's about it.
I just wonder if that, it could have been brought up on that as far as...
Now, I don't think it'll apply here unless something happens. If Trump files some type of a civil counterclaim against her, she might be able to do. She's not in jail, but her actual attorney is. But
I have an audience.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if he's disbarred or not. What I was curious about.
As far as I know, yes. And he was disbarred because he was cheating other clients. He was taking their money, I believe. But
As far as Trump in Tennessee. Go Big Orange.
Yeah. All right, man. We'll see you. Line two, is that Jeff? Jeff from Indiana. How you doing, bud?
I'm sitting home today, so I'm doing real good.
Wow. You're not telling me you're in Nashville traffic. That's a good day.
Yeah, when I don't have no trailers, that's a good day.
Well, I appreciate you listening to us on your day off.
Oh, yeah, always. But we're going to have to fight fire with fire. If you're a Republican prosecutor, if a Democrat jaywalks, you need to charge him with impeding traffic and throw him in jail. That's the one thing I had bad about Jeff Sessions and everything. You know, they should have charged Hillary and thrown her butt in jail because everybody knows what crime she did and everything. But it's like, oh, we can't do that because she was a whatever, you know. And I'm tired of it. The Democrats go after everybody on trumped up charges, so to speak. And, you know, when Joe Biden gets out of office, you know, he should be charged, you know, looked into and everything. And if he did the things he did, he should be charged with treason and should be either jailed for life or shot.
I'm telling you, man, we're there. And I agree with you. I think it's time for them to understand that if they're going to keep doing this, that we have every right. And by the way, we're not talking about making up charges. You're just talking about literally pursuing what they would pursue against us.
Charges that we know they committed and everything, but they won't charge them with it. And so, you know, if it was you or I, you know, that's a two-tiered justice system on the Republican side because they're not charging these people.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And I feel like we've been too nice so many times, it's coming back to bite us.
Yeah, and just like Eric Swalwell. If he was given this idiot was given information to a Chinese spy, whether he wittingly or unwittingly, but then it's awful funny that whenever he was told that she is a spy, she disappeared all of a sudden.
Yeah.
So you know who tipped her off, and that's aiding and abetting an enemy. And plus, you know, if she could have been interrogated and deposed and everything, she might have given him up, you know, to get out of here. And you know, the man committed treason. I'm fully, you know, I'd bet my last dime on it. So,
well,
and
what I'm loving, now is that the Republicans are indeed holding real subpoena-based investigative hearings, and they've got bank records now. James Comer was on this past weekend saying they've got actual bank records showing money from China going to the Biden family, and he says they have 11 more that they haven't had a chance to produce the records on yet. That's going to be amazing.
But that's absolutely meaningless.
Well, I hope not.
The DOJ is under Democrat control. They're not going to do a thing.
Not every U.S. attorney is the DOJ, though. I mean, a U.S. attorney can see this. And by the way, Jeff, my music's playing. That means the pastor's got to pause his sermon. All right, man. Appreciate you.
Have a good day
on your day off. All right, folks. Phil Williams, Right to Side Radio, going into the last half hour. We'll be right back. ruffians out there. You are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid and conservative and just plain right, covering some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the Union. That would be Alabama. I'm talking about this show goes way on down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back on over to Gadsden and parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. Hey, before we go any further, I gotta tell you guys, so Just Love Coffee Cafe, man. Now with the weather we've had, like today was a cappuccino day, I'm just saying. I mean, woke up this morning, it was 21 degrees. What a great day to have the most important cup of coffee you've ever had. Just Love Coffee Cafe. Do they have great coffees? Yes, they do. They have what Charlene calls the treat coffees. Their baristas can make you the cappuccinos, the lattes, the espressos, all the fancy ones. But then they have their award-winning dry roast coffees. They can grind those beans fresh, make you a steaming cup of hot, black, light roast, medium, dark roast, whatever you prefer. But yeah, Just Love Coffee Cafe. Two locations in our listening area. One on Hughes Road in Madison, the other on South Parkway in Huntsville, both of which I've been to. I love them, and they are designed to be not just a place to stop in and get the best food and coffee you found, but just to have a place to hang out if you want to. Check them out. Just Love Coffee Cafe, two locations, Hughes Road in Madison, South Parkway in Huntsville, and do me a favor. When you check out, tell them you heard about it on Right Side Radio. So the lovely Charlene just texted in.
Oh, yes.
Yes, she did. She, with regards to this political prosecution story that I'm doing, she said part of the argument they're using is that the info about the money Trump paid Daniels, he would not, if the info about the money that Trump paid to Stormy Daniels had you gotten out, he would not have been elected. And then she put in all caps, really? And then she said some audacity considering the whole Hunter laptop story being kicked off of social media. So what she's basically saying is, they're arguing now, well, Trump might not have got elected if the truth about Stormy Daniels came out. He was already facing charges or allegations of misogyny and you know, being, you know, infidelity and that kind of thing. And I'm not blowing it off. I'm not a fan of that. But I will say this. Those things have been settled and they were behind him. And anyway, that being said, she's right. It's amazing. They shut down the Hunter Biden story, which is literally believed to have had an impact on the election. But they want to say that a legal and binding agreement to settle a potential claim is somehow going to wind up being the thing that could have changed all of it. But this guy, Alvin Bragg. So Alvin Bragg is a Soros-backed district attorney in New York who has been working this grand jury investigation. Meanwhile, I don't have – you have most stats?
I have a couple.
What do you got?
So Alvin Bragg, Manhattan's district attorney, right, Downgraded 52% of felony cases to misdemeanors.
What? Where's that source from?
This is Daily Mail.
Golly, Bob. Mm-hmm. 52% downgraded. I mean, the crime on the streets in his district is unbelievable right now.
Yeah.
And yet he's gonna spend, 3 years investigating whether or not, can we make a crime out of this? Did Trump really do something? What they're claiming Trump did, by the way.
Right.
That's amazing.
52. Yeah, and it's actually compared to 39% in all of 2019.
Wow.
Yeah. And he just, sheep.
He just, he got elected. By the way, when he got elected, he said he was not going to enforce certain crimes. In fact, I believe, or prosecute certain crimes, I believe one of the ones he's not going to prosecute is prostitution. But he cares deeply about infidelity by the former president.
Yeah.
Come on.
Ugh.
I just.
Bragg wins a conviction 51% of the time, down from 68% in 2019.
That means he's a sorry DA.
Mm-hmm.
A DA's job is you're paid to win. God. Unbelievable. Yeah, when he got elected, he literally said he announced he was not going to be enforcing certain or prosecuting certain crimes. Well, that's okay. I'm sorry. I thought that was the job of the district attorney, was to ensure that crime was prosecuted. Nope, not this guy. Backed once again by George Soros, whose mission in life is to try and change, the narrative. We got a video. This particular video is actually a soundbite we're going to use, and this particular soundbite is pretty interesting. Boomer, remind me, what was that one that we've got? I think it was Trey Gowdy, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Yes, it was. Trey Gowdy on Fox News has one of the best little soliloquies about this. It's a tad longer than I would normally play, about a minute 48 seconds, something like that. But let's go ahead and just, if you got it, go ahead and play it right now. How about that?
Good evening, and thank you for joining us. I'm Trey Gowdy, and it's Sunday Night in America. On his first day in office, New York District Attorney Alvin Bragg announced all the crimes he would not prosecute. The person elected as the top law enforcement official had a long list of laws he didn't respect enough to follow. He substituted his politics for the rule of law because that's what so-called progressive prosecutors do. And there was nary a word of dissent on the left. Felonies would be downgraded, serious cases dismissed or pled down, prison terms would rarely be solved. Alvin Bragg was a social engineer masquerading as a prosecutor. To some on the left, showing a photo ID to vote is anti-democratic, but apparently not a prosecutor who ignores the law. And yet, we have finally stumbled upon the one crime worth the full weight of Alvin Bragg's office. Forget about guns and robbery and acts of violence. What really gets his attention is paying someone to be quiet about sex. To be clear, Alvin Bragg will not prosecute people who pay for sex. That's one of the crimes he promised to ignore. To him, you can pay someone for sex in New York and get away with it. But God forbid you pay someone to be quiet about it afterwards.
Go ahead and stop it there. That's so well said. And by the way, Trey Gowdy is a former prosecutor. He knows what he's talking about. And this, folks, this is insanity. This is a step off the ledge. I cannot help but wonder too how many Democrat strategists and big money Democrats right now are freaking out because they recognize that what's going to happen is you're going to but Alvin Bragg is going to propel Donald Trump into the presidency. And that, I mean, it's rallying his base right now. I'm just telling you, and rightfully so, by the way, rightfully so. The very idea that, and Trey Gowdy said it, you, sir, Mr. Alvin Bragg, District Attorney Alvin Bragg in Manhattan, you are so liberal that you will not prosecute actual crime. Your streets suck right now. It's not safe in so many areas of New York. And yet, at the same time, while you won't prosecute people who pay for sex, like Trey Gowdy said, you will prosecute somebody who had a settlement agreement to pay someone to not talk about the consensual sex they had. Show me where that makes sense. And oh, by the way, your lead witnesses, like one's a disbarred jailed lawyer, the other's a former porn star. And then what else have we got? And, you know, first of all, let me say this. If Trump did something wrong, it's wrong. But the idea that this suddenly became the best thing that the Manhattan district attorney could do, you know what this is? This is him shooting for an opportunity to get a role in a bigger administration. That's what he wants. I guarantee you. Somewhere in there, Alvin Bragg believes he's about to catapult his name into, you know, best-selling books and appearances on CNN. Who knows? Maybe he could be CNN's contributing legal analyst. And from there, maybe he can even propel himself into, I don't know, U.S. Attorney General or head of the DOJ. Wouldn't that be a hoot? But at the same time, what's really going to happen is I would bet, he has to calculate this. I would bet that what's going to happen is if an indictment comes forth and they actually go through the arrest proceedings and Trump has to have a mugshot, Trump himself is going to put that mugshot on a direct mail piece and send it out to every able-bodied voter in the entire United States. And then, oh, by the way, Trump being a billionaire means he can hire the best lawyers he needs. And he's going to make that DA's office miserable. He's going to flood them with paperwork and discovery. He's going to drag this case out. And oh, by the way, if you think that's going to stop him from running for president, guess what? It's not going to take his time. He's going to keep writing checks to the best lawyers in the nation. And it's going to be bigger than the O.J. Simpson trial if they ever get it that far, but I guarantee you it won't. In fact, most of the people that I've seen assess this thing say it's actually beyond the statute of limitations. So what the heck? So you're taking a possible misdemeanor that is beyond its statute of limitations. You're trying to advance it into a felony and indict the former president of the United States, who is currently running for president, and you are openly decrying the things he stands for, but yet you're going to be the blind justice that's going to come in and save the world from his hush money. The alleged crime, by the way, is that he in some way categorized these payments in such a way that they claim it was a benefit to his campaign and therefore was a campaign expense, whereas he wrote it off as legal expenses that he paid through his former attorney, Cohen, to pay her. Really? That's what we got? Is there more? I don't know. The grand jury indictment hasn't been sent down. In fact, the grand jury is not actually indicted. But this is the absolute worst jury pool that you could possibly want to be in and be Trump. This is the place, if you remember, Trump has pretty much left New York City. The place that he was the king of New York City for so many years. Now he lives in New Jersey and or Mar-a-Lago down in Florida and considers himself a citizen of Florida. It's amazing what New York has allowed itself to do and to become. But this is a farce. This is farcical. It does not need to happen. And if they do this, if the DA of Manhattan goes forward and indicts the former president on something that looks about as silly as you can bring, then I would say this. We're going to wind up seeing a groundswell of support for President Trump. And here, I live in the 4th Congressional District, man. The 4th Congressional District of Alabama had the highest per capita level of Trump support of any congressional district in the entire United States in both elections. And I guarantee you that's going to uptick. And I'm right there with you. I mean, these policies that he's put in place, they kept America where it needed to be, and look where we are right now. And yet that's what you're going to do. You're going to go after alleged hush money for an affair from 2006. Wow. Well, okay. Someday soon, I look forward to hearing that Joe Biden is being indicted. Just saying. All right, Boomer, take me to a break, brother. We'll take the last break of the day. We'll come right back. Put a lid on this one. Political prosecution. What are your thoughts? You want to text in? 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. We'll be right back. We're back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, making it cool to be a conservative. Hey, I got to tell you, ZLA Solutions, one of our sponsors, been with us since the very beginning. ZLA Solutions is just tearing it up right now, doing what they do best, getting people and jobs lined up together. So if you personally are looking for a job, you can go to their website, ZLA Solutions at ZLAUSA.com. They've got jobs posted all over North Alabama and beyond. But then at the same time, if you're an employer and you need to fill out the ranks of your workforce, and it can be onesies and twosies, it can be special niche skills, it can be anything, but they also can fill out an entire shift for you. It doesn't matter, entry-level positions or upper-level positions. Right now they're hiring for a major white-collar high-tech operation at Redstone Arsenal. Go to their website and see it, ZLAUSA.com. But here's the deal. They can make your life easier by doing all the recruiting, the background checks, the drug testing, blue collar, white collar, no collar. It doesn't matter. So, yeah, check them out. Their website again, ZLA Solutions at ZLAUSA.com. And yeah, I think you will be impressed. Tell them you heard about it on Right Side Radio, too. I would appreciate it. I was with them the other day, by the way, and they said, we had somebody call in on that high-tech thing we're hiring for in Huntsville. And they said, I heard about it on the radio. Bam. There you go. Which brings a point. I got to say this. Right Side Radio is a separate business. We are an organization that exists on our own revenue streams. We are not owned by the radio stations that we're on. If you want to advertise with RightSide, then you got to contact us. Go to our website, rightsideradio.org. There's a place on there where it says advertising and contact. Send us a message. We'll have our staff get in touch with you immediately. That's how all of our advertisers work. If you believe this show stands for what your business stands for, then how about it? Come on. Advertise with us, and we'll be glad to have you. But yeah, go to rightsideradio.org, and you can support the mission here by also supporting your own business and getting advertising across half the state. All right, there is that. I got to tell you, this whole thing about Trump, I wondered immediately, what kind of reaction are we going to see from Republicans? Will they come out and defend the situation? Will those who are running for office use it as leverage to try and gain the upper hand? Now, I've not seen anything from Nikki Haley yet. That's interesting. Not seen a thing from Nikki Haley. And it may be because she's the female candidate in the race. I don't know. You know, maybe she's trying to avoid appearing to support the idea of, but hey, Nikki Haley, she was a porn star who got $130,000. So there's that. But there've been immediate statements from some key people. Of course, Trey Gowdy, who's a former congressman, you heard his piece a minute ago. Lindsey Graham has been pretty strong on supporting Trump in this and calling this just a ridiculous situation. Governor Chris Sununu of New Hampshire on the Daily Caller, he was on CNN, actually. He called this thing a political circus. And he said it's going to be a circus. It's going to be a political circus. A lot of unknowns. He said this could be a misdemeanor and pointed out that there's ridiculous that we're pursuing this. Kevin McCarthy, story here I pulled off of CNN. Kevin McCarthy, California Republican, tweeted out that any potential indictment of the former president would represent an outrageous abuse of power from the Manhattan DA's office. Mike Pence, who has been maligned by Trump multiple times. Mike Pence, though, I like the fact that he's going to call balls and strikes. He points out that he's just taken aback by this and said it reeks of political prosecution. Vivek Ramaswamy was the first one I saw who came out and said something. He's running for president, just like we believe Mike Pence is, and certainly, Sununu's not, but he was talked about as a candidate. But Vivek Ramaswamy came out and just said this could be the downfall of capitalism if they're going to do this. I'm putting a little bit of paraphrase there, but he was strong on the thing. Ron DeSantis gave what Fox News right now is calling a fiery response to the question of this whole thing. He slams, it says on the headline, DeSantis slams the Soros-funded Manhattan DA for weaponizing his office as Trump rumors are swirling. So, folks, I'm just telling you, this is a mess. This is jackassery at its finest. Boomer likes it when I bring that. It's jackassery,
that's
Boomer.
That's my favorite.
It's evidence that New York City has a cacistocracy.
Ooh.
Man, they got cacistocracy and jackassery all in one sitting.
Ah, man.
What else can we... Jack wagons? Bunch of jack wagons?
Jack wagons. Come on. Yeah,
but that's what's happening. And I'm telling you, this is not good. If he's allowed to do this and it stands, I think the very strong likelihood is even if he comes back with an indictment, because a grand jury can indict, but they still have to prosecute, right? So the grand jury can come back with a finding and send it forward with an indictment. But the truth of the matter is he's still got to go stand before the judge and reconcile the law. A grand jury does not have to go by the law. They go by the facts they're presented and with a somewhat legal presentation. But there's so many nuances to grand juries that in truth what you're going to wind up having is the opportunity then to go before the judge and still get the case dismissed. They're going to have to explain statute of limitations. They're going to have to explain how a potential federal felony stemmed from a state misdemeanor. Doesn't usually work that way. They're going to have to explain how the DOJ had a finding of non-prosecution on this thing before. They're going to have to go and look at why this is a contract between two people that suddenly stems to or arises to the level of being, you know, fraud or felony. I guess it was felony fraud. We'll find out how they're going to categorize it when it comes out. It's a mess, y'all. It's political prosecution. And we'll talk about it more during the week. I feel certain, if indeed the predictions are correct, that he's going to be indicted tomorrow. We'll see. All right, folks, what a great show. My gosh, this was full. And I got all three dippers, Boom.
All three.
On Woo! My birthday.
On your birthday.
Y'all have a great night. Boomer and I back here tomorrow, too. We will see you then.